Hello and welcome to Value Research Podcasts. You are listening to the Fund Manager Interviews. Stay tuned for insightful conversations on the markets, funds, and professional journeys of the fund managers. For today's interaction, I'm joined by my colleague Chirag, and we have with us Harsha Upadhyay, CIO Equity at Kotak Mahindra AMC. Harsha, welcome, and thank you for taking the time to interact with us.
Thank you, Ruchira. It's my pleasure.
Why don't we begin today's conversation with you sharing with our viewers, how did you begin your journey at UTI? What got you started there?
My basic academic background is of engineering. After I finished my engineering, I worked for a year before joining my MBA course. Mm-hmm. Then I did my MBA from IIM Lucknow. So somewhere during that journey of completing engineering and starting out as a fresh MBA, I thought that I should make a career in capital markets. What helped me was also my summer internship, which was in equity research, which gave me insights into what happens in equity research and how that helps into constructing a portfolio, selecting stocks, etc. So to that extent, this was my basic knowledge about investments at that point of time. Obviously, I was curious to know more and get into investment field. And it so happened that I managed to get into UTI in equity research. There were very few companies at that point of time which were offering equity research role. And I managed to get through. And then the journey started. So I spent probably about half of my career in equity research before starting out as a fund manager. And that also happened in UTI. That was my second stint. So that's how the whole journey has been.
You know, Harsha, in a recent interview with Value Research, Samir Arora mentioned that, how in the mid-90s, getting a Bhav copy from the broker, that was considered research. So can you share with us how was working as an equity analyst at UTI in those days vis-a-vis, how the landscape has evolved over the years?
Yeah, Ruchira, you're trying to remind my age, but anyways. It was a very, very nascent stage of development of equity research and the mutual fund industry, I would say. We were probably one of the few teams which was formally doing equity research at that point of time. Mm-hmm. We were allocated sectors and we used to cover few sectors depending on the complexity of the sector at that point of time. And these were the days when we didn't have a Google or any of the other digital platforms, right? So all our research had to be reading media interviews, reading annual reports, reading whatever is available about the industry and company. So the way we used to go around, it seems very funny at this point of time. We had an attendant in our team and all analysts used to mark with different colored markers the news items which were relevant at that point of time. So every day, everyone used to read the newspapers and mark those with different colors. And then the attendant, looking at the colors, used to cut those and then file it in relevant company or industry files. So that used to be our reference point later on whenever we wanted to go back and see what had been going on in the industry or what the management had communicated earlier, etc. So those were the kind of initial days that we had to deal with. And then slowly it became even more formalized and it became easier to research companies.
Harsha, you are a successful arbitrage fund manager at UTI. With greater automation, how does the category work now?
See, even today, the category is still giving very handsome returns to investors. I mean, at that point of time, I was managing a fund of about 600 crores, which at that point was the largest in the industry. And we used to struggle managing that amount of money at that point of time. But today, look at the size of the industry and the kind of money that the managers have been managing. For example, our own team manages more than 35,000 crores in single fund of arbitrage. And still, the returns are quite good. So it's an execution game. So as long as you are able to focus on execution and get the best out of execution, you should be able to generate decent returns. Obviously, returns will go through cycles depending on short-term interest rates. What is the speculative interest in the market because you are on the other side of the speculative interest in case of an arbitrage fund. And various other factors in terms of what is the amount of positions that you can take and what is the current assets under management in the industry, and so on and so forth. But clearly, this is one asset class which has provided very good returns for a short-term investor without taking much risk in the market, almost close to a zero kind of risk.
Harsha, can you just explain, you know, a little bit elaborately what was the thing at that point of time, 25, 30 years ago, and what has changed in managing this kind of fund, or, you know, what has changed particularly in this segment?
So clearly, the size itself is a huge change, not just the assets under management, but also the derivatives market itself. Along with the derivatives market, the category has also grown. And we have been using a lot of algorithms now to actually put in the trades, arbitrage trades. So it's become that much easier in that sense, because there is a lot of automated support that you get. But at the same time, the challenges are of a different kind. Look at the size of the industry, and you can imagine what kind of positions that one would be looking at, and the amount of churn that happens every month, etc. So clearly the challenges are on the size, and you have to maintain the same kind of proficiency on the execution, even at much higher, larger sizes. So that's how the game has changed.
How would you define yourself as an investor, and what are the stock and situation which excites you?
Chirag, clearly, we are fundamentally driven fund house, and we look at three pillars which are critical in terms of looking at and evaluating a particular business and a stock. First and foremost, we look at the business and try to understand what are the competitive advantages, whether it's a scalable business, whether the company has wherewithal to really go ahead of the competition and grow at a reasonably stronger growth rate than the market. Is there pricing power in that business? Because ultimately, that's what leads into profitability. So generally, understand everything about the business in the first place. The second is about management evaluation. And here, we try to look at how aligned is the management with the minority shareholders. This is easier said than done, because there is no hard-coded number or hard-coded fact that is available. Only through experience of our research team and our own experience, we are able to see whether the management is in line with minority shareholders or not. We look at the capital allocation decisions of the management in the past, because as company grows, those decisions will again have to be taken, and how efficiently they have been using the capital. So capital allocation is very, very important to us. All in all, the governance and the bandwidth of management is what we try to look at. After these two pillars, we move on to the valuation pillar, wherein, depending on the industry segment, there are different valuation metrics that would be relevant. But we look at many factors under valuation, and then try to take a view in terms of whether there is any merit in investing into that stock or not. So this is broadly what we do. And clearly, all is driven by fundamentals rather than betting on any events or having tactical plays in the portfolio.
But Harsha, what kind of situations or what kind of markets like is volatile? How do you know where you are very happy to allocate more kind of the equity markets? In what kind of market scenario, you know, you would like to allocate more towards equity or reduce the weight toward equity?
Chirag, we are clearly driven by what happens to our fund flows, right? As long as our investors are putting money into our funds, even when we are not so positive on a certain valuation in a market or certain factors, macro factors in the market, we may tend to still invest in what we at that point of time visualize as relatively safer or better sectors and businesses. So to that extent, I would say all our decisions are driven by what happens to our funds in terms of flows. But generally, the real challenge is to identify businesses which will be scalable, which will continue to deliver better than cost of capital on a sustained basis. If you are able to identify some of those businesses at right valuations, then the compounding characteristics of those businesses will take care of the fund returns. Yes, there will always be some mistakes that will happen. And that's the reason why we have a diversified portfolio at our end. Not that all our calls are going to go right. So to minimize that risk, we keep a diversified portfolio. And hopefully more decisions are right than what goes wrong, and that's what delivers returns.
All right, that was the broad investment philosophy that you follow at the fund house. Can you also share what kind of stock becomes a compelling buy for you? If you can share some anecdotes there, that would be great.
Ruchira, I will not be able to speak on individual stocks, but clearly the thread that we are looking at in terms of identifying good stocks is that they should have compounding characteristics, as I explained earlier. The business has to be strong and competitive, has to be scalable. And at the same time, the management has to be aligned with the minority shareholder interest and should have the vision and the bandwidth to really take that company to a greater size consistently through the cycles. That's very, very important. And at the same time, the valuations, both at the entry and the exit, also determine overall returns that you can generate from a stock. So valuations are definitely going to be very crucial. And generally, we have followed a principle of growth at a reasonable price. This is more like a middle path, I would say, in an emerging market like India. Growth is always favored. So to that extent, even if you go wrong in terms of assessing the cycle or the impact of future growth, probably your returns are going to be slightly diminished as compared to your expectations, but you are still likely to make money if that growth persists. So to that extent, we believe tilting a little bit towards growth is definitely good in the Indian context. And at the same time, one also has to keep valuations in mind. So you cannot pay any price to the higher growth that you are aspiring for. The valuations have to be more or less in line with the fair range of valuations. So to that extent, if you are investing in growth stocks at a reasonable valuation, then hopefully over a period of time, you should be able to outperform. This is the thesis under which we try to work.
Yeah, you spoke about the investment philosophy of the fund house and then you how the stocks are selected in the portfolio. So coming to the next thing, what are the stocks you don't touch or, you know, which doesn't enter your portfolio?
So clearly, if there are question marks on the governance side, we really don't like those businesses. Even if they are available at lower valuations or attractive valuations, we generally skip those opportunities. The companies which are highly leveraged, which are very, very cyclical with a strong competitive advantage, etc., are also something that we generally don't want to be invested into. As I said, our portfolios are more fundamentally driven. We are more of a buy and hold investors rather than betting on tactically for the very short term. So whenever we analyze companies, we try to look at it from both short term as well as from a medium term. As long as medium term outlook is good, and if there are no visible roadblocks in the very short term, we go and invest and then keep monitoring it in terms of growth and our expectations and the valuations at which it is trading, etc. And keep either moderating or continuing with the same position, depending on what comes out of those analyses.
Harsha, now coming to the Kotak Flexicap Fund, you know, which is one of the biggest fund in the category, and if we look at the returns, there is no particular consistency in terms of returns. So, what are the reasons, and how do you plan to improve the performance of the fund going forward?
When you say there is no consistency, probably you are referring to with respect to the benchmark. And unfortunately, at this point of time, we have no control on the benchmarks. The regulator decides the benchmarks. And you will know that the fund has been in existence for 14 years now. And the benchmarks have changed price. Initially, it was Nifty 50, then it became NSE 200. And post December 1st, 2021, it's become NSE 500. So to that extent, whenever you are looking at today's benchmark and comparing past performance, you will see all these anomalies, which is happening across sectors, not just in Flexicap. Now, probably it is happening in various other categories also, depending on the vintage of the fund. Some of the newer funds obviously will not have this kind of issue, but all the older funds have this issue. But setting that aside, if you look at the rolling returns, because that's what one should be looking at rather than point-to-point returns. If you make an analysis of rolling returns of 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, etc., which is what we suggest our investors to come with in terms of the investment horizon, you will see that across time periods, our funds, not just Kotak Mahindra, but almost all of our funds have outperformed even the revised benchmarks on a consistent manner. But every fund will have phases where it could underperform due to various reasons. It could be external to the portfolio, it could be internal to the portfolio. But those are the challenges. I mean, if you are in the market and have managed funds for 15 years or so, you will definitely have some of these cycles coming and challenging you. And that's what has happened even in this case. But we are quite confident that if we can stick to our investment philosophy and continue with our disciplined approach, we will continue to deliver returns to the investors.
Harsha, if we look at the portfolio of Equity Opportunities Fund, Blue Chip, and even the ELSS fund, the top holdings almost look similar. There are some private banks, some IT companies, some auto stock, and one oil and gas stock, which approximately holds around 18 to 22% of the portfolio. So the thing I just want to understand is, are you finding limited opportunities in the market at this point of time?
See, what I explained earlier as well, we are fundamentally driven fund house. So if our research team is positive on a certain sector or a certain business, as long as it can make it into any of the portfolios, given, say, the mandates, it will be part of the mandate. We just don't create two portfolios because we need to create unique portfolios. Finally, we are concerned about what returns we deliver to the investors. And if there is a good stock that can come into all portfolios, so be it, it will come into all portfolios. But there could also be stocks which may not fit into a particular portfolio because of the mandate, because of the liquidity and various other factors. Then it will probably go into wherever it can find its way in terms of compatibility. So to that extent, having common names, I don't think that's a crime. And also we are all finally have to beat the benchmarks, because otherwise you will ask the same question that you asked previously, right? What is happening to... If the benchmarks are overlapped, that will also be seen in the portfolios to some extent, I would say, as long as you are positive on some of those businesses.
Harsha, if you look at the performance of all these stocks, you know, these top holdings, they have underperformed the broader market. So is it a cause of concern for you, or, you know, how do you then look at the stocks which are underperforming for 1 year or 2 year kind of thing?
Chirag, postmortem is always easy, right? What we need to do and expect is what is likely to happen over the next few quarters, next few years. And today, if we are holding particular stock, we are positive on those stocks from a future perspective, not from what has happened in the past. If you keep looking at only the past, you will also be behaving in terms of how each sector has behaved in the past, which may not be the right way to look at. And as I clearly said, we are not a momentum-oriented portfolio managers. We clearly believe in researching sectors and stocks and then taking a call. So to that extent, these are all the sectors and businesses which we remain positive on. Depending on the mandate of the fund, you will see different weightages to these names. That's the only difference.
Harsha, you've been in the industry for nearly 2.5 decades. I know you won't take names, but without taking those names also, if you can share which was your best call so far, and have there been any learnings from the investments that have backfired?
See, many learnings. I don't think we will ever become masters of the market. So to that extent, we've always remain students of the market. And making mistakes and learning from those mistakes is part of the journey. I don't think one can ever say that we will never make mistakes or we have never made mistakes. There are many stocks. I mean, as Chirag pointed out, even today there are stocks which have underperformed over the last 1 year or so. They are bound to be there. And that's the reason why we keep a diversified portfolio. And that's the reason why we try to minimize the risk by diversifying. If we knew everything, what is going to happen about a business so easily, then probably why create a portfolio? You can simply have one stock. So that's how we look at it. And there have been many, many such mistakes and learnings from them. Clearly, what one needs to focus is not to repeat some of those mistakes, maybe in terms of analyzing the entry-level valuations, or maybe making some assumptions. If you have gone wrong a couple of times, then you will know that this is exactly what is likely to be the pitfall, and you try to build new scenarios and try to see whether it makes sense or not. So every situation is different, and you need to continue trading along those challenges.
And what about the best call which you have made, you know, which you still remember after spending such a long time in the markets?
Again, Chirag, just like bad calls, there will also be a lot of good calls that have happened. But finally, we have to deliver to the investors. If we are able to deliver to investors on a 7, 10 year, 15 year period, that's what helps our investors in terms of compounding returns. If you deliver in a particular year stupendous returns and then fall back on returns, I don't think every investor will be happy, because it's a natural phenomenon that people look at past returns and come into funds. And if you are unable to replicate some of those performances, people get disappointed. So our idea is to kind of be more consistent and expectable kind of returns, rather than having very good years and very bad years in between. Outcome is not in our hands. That could happen at some point of time. But generally, from an investing perspective, we try to be a lot more conservative. And the simple thing is, it's a pure math. When you have 100 rupees and if you fall 20%, you go to 80%. But to come back to 100, you need 25% more. So that's why, as a philosophy, we try to minimize risk. So rather than looking at what has worked or what is likely to work, we also try to look at what can take the markets, take the portfolio down. So unlike the most focus that is there on what is there in the portfolio, our focus is also on what should not be in the portfolio. And if you can avoid some of those lousy names, probably your performance over a period of time will be better than the benchmark and better than what otherwise would have been.
All right, with that, it's time for us to wrap up this chat. Thank you, Harsha, for taking the time and joining us for this interaction.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Chirag.